complete but not operational, the Nord Stream 2 project is put on hold. Germany has halted approval for this pipeline that will bring Russian gas into Europe. So is it a politically motivated decision? And what does it mean for gas prices that are already high? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the program. I'm Hashim Ahelbarra. A pipeline created to supply gas from Russia to Germany and Europe has suffered another setback. Germany's energy regulator has suspended approval of the Nord Stream 2. It wants the Russian company behind the project to form a local subsidiary to operate the German part of the pipeline. That's pushed up wholesale gas prices in the UK and EU. Energy prices were already high after the winter in Europe last year put pressure on supplies. The US and many European countries say the project will increase Europe's reliance on Russian energy and could be weaponized by Moscow. But Russia maintains it will solve the continent's energy crisis. Last month, President Vladimir Putin announced Moscow could start supplies as soon as it gets the green light from Germany.
As I have already told you, 18.5 billion cubic meters multiplied by 2, minus 9 billions of gas non-delivery on the European market by the Americans and the Middle East partners, and 22.5 billion shortage because of decreasing production. European gas markets could now face a shortage of 70 billion cubic meters of gas. That's a lot. First pipeline of the Nord Stream 2 is full of gas, and if the German regulator hands its clearance for supplies tomorrow, supplies of 17.5 billion cubic meters will start the day after tomorrow. In December, all the technical work to fill the second pipeline of Nord Stream 2 will be finished. In total, the amount will be 55 billion cubic meters.
Ukraine opposes the Nord Stream gas pipeline and welcomes the German regulator's decision. Yuri Vitrenko heads the energy company Naftogaz and says the move suggests that the German regulator shares our position that certification can not only apply to the pipeline in Germany. He says it should apply to the entire pipeline from the territory of the Russian Federation to the territory of Germany. Nord Stream 2 is expected to double the volume of gas coming from Russia into Europe. The 1,200-kilometer pipeline is owned by the Russian energy giant Gazprom, with investment from several European companies. It will carry 55 billion cubic meters of natural gas a year. Nord Stream 2 was built to run under the Baltic Sea and bypass Poland and Ukraine. Its predecessor, Nord Stream 1, used the same route. When launched, the two pipelines could account for up to 60% of Russia's gas exports to Europe. In August, the US imposed sanctions on Russian vessels laying the pipeline for the project. Let's bring in our guests in Berlin, Erich Bruckner, professor of political science at Stanford University in Berlin. In Moscow, Pavel Felgenhauer is political commentator and columnist for Novaya Gazeta. In Bern, Cornelia Meyer is an economist and oil and gas specialist. Welcome to the program. Erich, to what extent was the German watchdog's decision to suspend the approval for the Nord Stream 2 purely technical and based on administrative grounds?
Well, this is hard to say. On the one hand, it's not a court that acts independently. So an agency reports to the government. And that was exactly the reason why the European Court of Justice criticized the status of the federal agency for the network approval, that their status should become more independent in order to avoid political influence. So at its current state, it can be influenced, they can receive orders from the government, but the question is who's calling them? Because we are in the middle of a handover from the Merkel administration to the new, as we call it, streetlight coalition with three parties involved, and therefore no one is really in the driver's seat at this point.
Pavel, I understand the general sentiment in Russia would be that basically this is a politically motivated decision.
Well, actually, the Kremlin says they believe it's not, that this is a technical kind of hiccup that the Russian sponsored Nord Stream 2 AG, which is registered in Switzerland and owns and operates and should operate Nord Stream 2, will have to create a German subsidiary, and that will take 4 to 6 weeks to create. And then the German agency will again begin the process of certification, and that in general, the period of certification, which is 4 months beginning from 8 September, that means January 8th, they'll complete. There's a problem that after that, the issue may go for 4 more months to the European Commission. So it's not clear when actually Nord Stream 2 is going to be operational, and that's not seen very good in Russia.
Cornelia, given the current situation, it seems that this is going to take at least 8 months for the paperwork to be processed in Germany to ensure this is going to be under EU jurisdiction. And you have at the same time energy crunch, which is likely to further strain the economy in Europe. How do you see this moving forward in the upcoming months?
Well, it's not easy, and I don't think it has to take 8 months. To a certain degree, while unfortunate, I understand what the German regulator has done, because Switzerland is not in the EU, and anything under Swiss, under Swiss law is not subject to the European Court of Justice. So, if they want to get the pipeline approved by the EU, this may not be the dumbest move that they have done. So what really is important is to really fast track this incorporation and the move of the assets, and then fast track the approval. And given the energy crunch that we have, I think it's in most people's interest to get this done quickly. However, as our colleague in Berlin has pointed out, we are in between an interregnum. We are between two governments. And the new government, you have the Social Democrats, the SPD, who is very pro, on balance, very pro Nord Stream 2. And you have the Greens, who are very against Nord Stream 2. So this is not going to be, it's not going to be the easiest of times for Nord Stream 2.
Mm-hmm. Ulrich, until a few months ago, the general feeling in Europe that Russia was not pumping enough gas into European continent, choosing instead what it described as the need to refill its own stocks. And this explains why many have been saying that Russia is weaponizing its gas. Do you think that this decision by the German watchdog comes against the backdrop of this ongoing row over how to deal with gas supplies in Europe?
Well, we have seen several winters in which Russia weaponized gas supply for geostrategic reasons. And one can read the latest developments in a similar way, because we are currently in a rather hot phase of a cold conflict that includes Belarus and it includes the Ukraine. And it's certainly in Russia's best interest to see very high gas prices. While inside the European Union, we see a number of countries being heavily dependent on Russian gas. That differs from country to country, and that also explains why we have a very cacophonic orchestra these days when it comes to think of shall Nord Stream be open as soon as possible to lower the gas prices, or is this just another weapon in Putin's hands that can be turned against the European Union as a whole?
Pavel, I mean, the gas giant Gazprom decided to reduce the shipments through the Yamal Europe pipeline that goes through Belarus and also Poland, saying that instead it needs at this particular moment to prioritize the refilling of its own domestic storage facility, which led many to think, oh, you know what? Russia is squeezing gas supplies for political reasons?
Of course, Moscow rejects any kind of such notions and says that the high gas prices in Europe are a result of very high gas prices in the Pacific Asia region, and that liquefied gas supplies by tanker are going in that direction instead of going to Europe because the prices are higher there, and that Gazprom is actually honoring all its contract obligations. Mm-hmm. But the problem, of course, is very much there. High gas prices, Moscow says it's not that interested. It's interested in a stable situation. But it's also clear that Russia would want to have an option not to use the Ukrainian gas transport system at all, to put pressure maybe on Ukraine, or also if there's any kind of serious flare-up on the border between Ukraine and Russia, which could technically even stop fully any mm-hmm. kind of transit of gas through Ukraine, then Russia would have options through two pipelines, actually four of them, because there are two pipelines, each with two pipes going through on the Baltic Sea, and of course another one, other pipelines going through Turkey. So Russia could bypass a possible confrontation zone and continue to keep Europe supplied, mm-hmm. and maybe incent Europe not to intervene into any kind of flare-ups that could happen in Eastern Europe.
Cornelia, you have winter and you have energy crisis. Who are we to blame? Is it the post-pandemic recovery? Is it Russia? Or is it weather-related events, particularly last winter?
It is the perfect storm. You had last winter, you had such a cold winter that storage was unplenished. And I have some sympathy for Gazprom again for first filling their own storage because they had a cold winter too. So their storage was depleted too. For first, you know, you first look after your own people and then you go further. So that's one thing. Then we have obviously the competition, as was mentioned, between Asia and Europe for LNG, because China is importing more and more LNG. This year, China will become the largest importer globally of LNG. It will supersede Japan in that position. And so we have, and obviously we have some geopolitical tensions, but mainly it's the perfect storm of supply and demand. And when it comes to price, yes, obviously the high LNG prices are partly to blame, but we also have to see that part of the European takeoff is indexed to oil. And so when oil prices go up, part of the indexation goes up as well. So it's tough. And for Europe, the question is, how do we get enough gas? Mm-hmm. And how do we ensure that we don't put the poorest segments of the population to the stark choice of do I eat or do I heat?
Now, Ulrich, for the governing coalition in Germany, you have a decision that is made now, which is most likely going to result in low storage levels in Europe, an energy crisis, different economy sectors affected. Is there any contingency plan here for Germany and for Europe?
Well, it's interesting that every member of the upcoming new government announces that we need radical changes when it comes to climate change. And they are all pushing for renewables, that more needs to be done, more than what the previous government has done. And given that we see rising gas prices, that could potentially be a leverage to understand that it's now high time and we shouldn't discuss the nitty-gritties of how distant is a windmill next to a building or all the reasons why it didn't meet the targets that have been defined before. So there is certainly a push coming from the current, what was described as a perfect storm, that will see more efforts and more investment in renewables that decreases the geostrategic dependency from Russia.
Pavel says this is a crisis moment. Everybody's looking for leverage. And when it comes to Ukrainians, they seem to be pretty much excited about the potential of what might happen next, particularly because they are now going to be part of the consultation process. Do you think that the Ukrainians now are given this unique opportunity where they have to put more pressure on all the parties for whatever happens in the future?
Yes, the German regulator included the Ukrainian representative in Germany of Neftigaz, their gas transporting company, into the certification process. But of course, he doesn't have any veto power. Ukrainian opinion may be taken into consideration, but no more than that. It's a kind of nicety, but it doesn't give Ukraine any kind of say. And they are worried that if Russia manages to get Nord Stream 2 fully operational anytime soon in the coming year, in the beginning of the coming year, that may give Russia the opportunity to do something more drastic in military terms in the Ukraine, and also, of course, cut the Ukrainian supply through Ukraine, maybe dramatically, and that means they won't have to use the so-called virtual reverse system to get Russian gas, but officially it's not coming from Russia, it's coming from Slovakia or somewhere, but actually it's Russian gas, and they won't get that. So they're also will have problems this winter and in general further on. So yes, Ukrainians are worried on a number of issues concerning Russia, and they're very, very worried. Yes.
Cornelia, how do you respond to the argument that one of the main reasons why in the past the Russians were trying to deliberately withhold gas from Europe is particularly because they were trying to push the Europeans to shift from the spot market purchases to the newly online platform based in St. Petersburg, so that the Russians will have a bigger say on trading of gas?
Well, actually, the Russians prefer not spot markets, but long-term agreements, which, when you know how much investment is needed into getting gas from the gas field to the end user, to the burner tip, is perfectly understandable. And I would not take big stock on that. When it comes to Ukraine is difficult, it's tricky, but I would also like to remind us that Russia has supplied Europe with gas for the past 50 years or so without essentially missing a beat, even when the former Soviet Union was breaking up. So yes, there are the politics, and obviously they're playing politics, but in the end, overall, Russia has been a pretty reliable supplier. It also needed the foreign currency from Europe. I would just like to quickly respond to our colleague in Germany in terms of absolutely the German government wants to move to more renewables, but to get from here to there, they will still need gas. Let's not forget, they want to get out of coal. They are getting out of nuclear. So somehow you need to have the base load to produce the electricity that everybody needs.
Okay, Ulrich, since we're trying to figure out the ultimate end game for all the parties here. Now, Europe's supplies of natural gas remain tight, which means that the prices are definitely going to continue to go up, which is most likely going to push many countries, Germany in particular, to revisit dirty fuel, particularly coal and fuel oil. Is this a good option, given that the coalition with the Greens, part of it, are definitely going to dismiss it?
Well, it is too early to predict what exactly the new coalition government will decide. Would they keep everything secret, not only on energy policy and geostrategic questions, but the whole coalition agreement is kept a secret, and we will only learn next week what the various compromises will look like. And one can read the decision today as a way to buy time for the new government to decide how to balance the conflicting interests, how to fulfill the requirements from the European Union to divide the operation and the network. This is technically an important reason for the agency why it decided the way it decided. But I think it's also an additional geopolitical bargaining chip in the ongoing discussions with Russia and Belarus. If one makes a move, another country makes another move. Mm-hmm. And this does not even need to have anything to do with energy.
Pavel, since this is definitely a crisis with geopolitical proportions. Now, the Russians, because they supply 35% of the gas imports for the European Union, have a leverage. But ultimately, their biggest concern is that if they have any future problems with the Russian, it means that a huge chunk of the revenues they used to get from the European market is going to be massively affected. Is this something which is likely to push the Russians for a balancing act here?
Well, Europe needs Russian gas, and of course Russia needs Europe too. Russia is supplying natural gas to Japan, to China, but Europe is an essential client, so Russia and Europe are tied together there. The future has problems with the CO2 signature taxation coming into effect in Europe, with the European Union saying that they will oppose any kind of extraction of gas or oil in the Arctic, which Russia is rejecting right now. So they are serious problems in the future. They are problems right now and problems in the future. How Russia is going to be seen and how Russia is going to be interacting with Europe on supplying gas. Not only gas, of course, Russia supplies many other oil and metals and fertilizer and lots of other kind of commodities. Mm-hmm. So these are Russia and Europe have to work together. But right now, there's a lot of problems and a lot of misunderstanding. It's very complex and very dangerous.
Cornelia, you said there's going to be a long way to go for the Germans before they have their own diversified renewable energy platforms. For the time being, do you think that bringing non-Russian oil to the European market is going to be easy, tapping into potential resources nearby or looking for alternatives? Is this something which is feasible in the short term?
Well, we already see LNG from all sorts of parts of the world to come to Europe, to LNG terminals. We have pipelines coming from the Mediterranean, from North Africa through the Mediterranean. But mind you, there again, we have, if you look at Libya, if you look at Algeria, we have geopolitical tensions. So there again, we need to, Europe will need to get the gas and the oil from where they can get it, and Russia will remain a major supplier of oil. We will see the geopolitical tensions, but it will remain very important for the time being, because given energy transition and given that especially countries like Germany, Switzerland want to get out of nuclear, everybody wants to get out of coal, I don't see how you get around gas.
Ulrike, less than a minute, if you don't mind. The European Green Deal, is it something that is likely to be a moment for the Europeans to say, you know what, it's about time for us to look into a decarbonized, developed economy instead of this reliance that has been going on for generations with the Russians, which seems to be a major source of concern for the Europeans now?
Well, this became certainly a mainstream perspective, not only in Germany as a forerunner for climate change policies because we can afford it, but it's also what the European Union or the European Commission as the driver of this put as the top priority. And this will undermine the Russian business model that is massively dependent on having partners that are still willing to burn fossil fuel. Of course, it is a transition matter, and it's a question of how long it's going to take. But it will certainly change the mutual relationship between Russia and the European Union if the Green Deal changes the energy mix towards more renewables.
Quite fascinating as this story unfolds that many people are thinking that the US could step in and offer an alternative supply for the Europeans in case they decide to part ways with the Russians. But it remains to be seen whether the shale capacity and whether the Americans will be able to fill in the gap and the void left by the Russians if there is a split. Ulrike Bruckner, Pavel Felgenhauer, Cornelia Meyer, I really appreciate your insight. Thank you very much. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Hashim Ahlbarra, and the entire team here in Doha. Bye for now.